Hello, and welcome back to another edition of Aster's Economic Week in Review. You have myself, Mac O'Brien, and Aster's CIO, John Eckstein. John, how are you?
I'm great, Mac. How's it going?
It's going well. It is Thursday afternoon. We're recording the podcast. We have some new employment figures, as always, that came out, and we have an agenda that we kind of discussed beforehand that touches upon retail sales, some housing data. So, John, we start the podcast off typically with your high-level overview, the big picture of the economy. And for the sake of not being redundant, anything new pop up over the past week that kind of changed your view of the big picture of the U.S. economy?
No, my big picture is the same. In March and April, we lost about 20 million jobs. We've gotten about 10 million back. They continue to be added back, but the pace of job growth seems to be slowing. Yeah. But I have to warn you, Mac, like I said a couple of weeks ago, like most of the time economics is like this, like nothing happens most of the time. It's like, we're going to be a little redundant, but you know, so that's my criticism of the economists you hear on TV is that people are just trying to find something to say something interesting. And you know, it's not always interesting.
Yeah.
Except for it's always worth listening to the podcast, of course.
Of course. Cause you never know when that one interesting data point is going to rear its head. So you just mentioned the trend in job growth, unemployment claims. This week, in terms of seasonally non-adjusted jobless claims, anything interesting there?
Yeah, so there's always stuff to dig into, even if the big picture doesn't seem to be changing rapidly. So it was a good unemployment insurance claims day today. Notably, if you've been listening the last couple of weeks, you'll remember that California hadn't been reporting for a few weeks. And obviously, California is an important part of the labor market. California's back in the system. No big changes to the big picture, but both pandemic unemployment insurance and the regular state claims, new claims have dropped there. And continuing claims continue to drop as well. So some of the drop in continuing claims is made up for by people going into a special program for people who have exhausted their unemployment insurance. But even taking all those different things into account, the number of people on any form of unemployment insurance is dropping. Mm. And that's unambiguously good. So I think right now you would say that the level of insured unemployment today, the percentage of people in the labor force who are getting unemployment insurance right now, is probably something around 8%, down from, 12% 3 months ago and 16% at the worst of the crisis.
Yeah, and then this is obviously more opinion than it would be data related because it just started, but with the surge in positive testing rates for the coronavirus, especially in the north, the northern cooler states, do you see that having a large impact with the, Illinois, in my neighborhood in particular, but a large part of Illinois just kind of shut down restaurants again? Most likely will happen, if not across the entire northern hemisphere of the United States, but, you know, portions of it. Is that a concern at all from a labor market perspective?
Sure. Sure. Like if people can't work, like that's going to be bad. And I'll point out that it's not really the formal shutdown that are necessarily the whole problem, right? Like I think people would probably have stopped going to restaurants in North Dakota, no matter what the state of lockdown or whatever is there, because North Dakota has the highest rate in America right now in terms of per capita. And so like the virus is the problem. The lockdown is not the problem.
Yeah, the kind of the behind the scenes. My a friend of mine owns a law firm or started a law firm as a partner at a law firm, and it's a fairly large firm. And he was saying that this week they are processing a large number of new foreclosures, and he doesn't do residential, it's all commercial. And so I called him to get color on that. He was saying that the borrower for a commercial property, whether it's a restaurant or whether it's a strip mall or what have you, their personal assets are not tied to the loan. But there's a clause, and I forget the legal term that he used, but the clause was something to do with failure to perform, where if the borrower doesn't perform, right, makes bad decisions that ends up putting the business under, that their personal assets can be tied to the loan. So in this case, he said, in almost every one of these foreclosures that he's starting to file this week, the business owners look at this second shutdown and they say, if we make it through this, will have such little dry powder left, we potentially could be on the hook for failure to perform depending on what happens. But right now, there is no question that the coronavirus and the state is forcing them to go into foreclosure. So therefore, they walk away, they lose their equity, but they don't have any personal liability to the default on the loan. And that's a part of the business or the world, the industry that I don't understand very well. If you're starting to see that pick up, obviously that can't be good for not just job growth, but creation and output and defaults, things of that nature.
Yeah, there's definitely going to be more turmoil associated with the end of COVID, however it happens. You know, though we should also say, again, as we pointed out, that new business formations are at a new high too. To some extent, that's
right.
People who are at a job and, you know, sort of forced against their will to start a sole proprietorship. But to some extent, it's, you know, people starting cleaning services or whatever else people need now. So it's hard to say in advance, like how it will shake out. So before we leave the labor market, just a couple more points. One is that, you know, I said that the insured rate of unemployment is down substantially from July, you know, so from, say from like 12% to 8-ish%. But also what happened in July was that the $600 a week supplement dropped out. And as of this recording, it is not back in. Nothing is back in. And so what's happened is that the amount of support the government is giving the economy has dropped substantially.
Right.
So at the peak of the 2008 recession, the government was paying about three quarters of a billion a day. Now at the peak of the coronavirus shutdown, the government was paying $5 billion a day.
So you're talking, it went from 750 million.
And in a bad time,
a bad time of 08 to $5 billion. So yep. Six, seven times multiple.
Yep. And so now, and so that was at the peak of our expenditures when we had the $600 supplement. And now that number is down to about $1 billion.
Okay.
So some of that is because people have come off unemployment insurance. As we've mentioned before, that number's down, you know, by a third. So yay, that's good. But a lot of it is just because we stopped that supplemental spending. And like, we don't know how that's going to shake out, right? So, I mean, people have, we'll talk about this in retail sales a little bit, but there was a lot of pent up savings. So, you know, we'll see how this shakes out in the future.
Sounds good. Do you want to move on to retail sales?
Yeah, let's talk about retail sales. They were good.
First column is what?
The survey and second
column. Oh, okay, got it. So retail sales look to be favorable, right? From a survey versus actual, not huge numbers, but.
Well, I mean, these are big numbers for normal times, actually, right? So they're not big numbers for 2020, but, you know, it's more than retail sales increased in January 2019 or any month in 2019, for example. So there, this is, again, like an unambiguously good number. So the year-over-year change in retail sales is actually the highest on record at 9.1%. So some of the composition of retail sales is shifting a little bit. People are spending relatively more at restaurants and gas stations and clothing stores than they were. It's still down year on year, but still much less down than it was a few months ago. And yeah, so the overall retail sales is just kind of booming.
What industries are the big winners in retail sales, like outdoor equipment, guns and ammo with all the new
year to date? So Amazon, non-store realtors, right? And they don't break that down by component. And then after that, building materials, food and beverage stores, but not restaurants and bars, motor vehicle parts and services, sporting hobbies, books and music, all that stuff. So
people are staying home, ordering stuff online and drinking home improvement projects.
Yeah, what we've all been talking about the last Netflix and chill.
Yep.
And so right now, the retail's inventory to sales ratio, right? So the number of, you know, cookies they've got on hand relative to the number of cookies they usually sell is at basically a record low. It was a little bit lower a few months ago, but extremely low. So that's a way that we could hope to get a little boost just from inventory rebuilding. We could goose the economy a little bit that way. And so one more thing about the spending and its relationship to income is that you definitely see the checking. So like Chase basically broke down their checking account people, and they know who's getting a check from the unemployment insurance. And so they like touted up their checking account sort of in the aggregate. And you definitely see their savings account build from, you know, up to like more than two times what it was in January on average, whereas people who are employed, their savings went up a little bit, but only 1.25 times. And now as the benefits have dropped out, the extra supplement has dropped out, those checking accounts are dwindling. So often is the case, we've got a few contradictory things going on in the economy right now, right? We do have, in terms of savings is very high. We do have this potential inventory rebuild as a boost. People are getting back to work. On the other hand, the people who have been hurt the most by the crisis have been, are spending the resources that their unemployment insurance and their what they had to make do. So as always, it's sort of complicated.
Yeah. The $600 stimulus was ended at the end of July. We've been seeing and reading and talking about a second stimulus package. And I asked you this last week again, what risk is there to a economic, I want to say contraction, but if we don't pass some sort of stimulus package, let's say to January or February, I mean, is that going to be a significant hurdle to overcome for the economy?
I think yes, it will be.
So, John, let's move over to the housing market.
Great, yeah. So, we've said several times, housing market is a source of strength and on its own, and also, you know, it's a sector that you think has a lot of multiplier effects, right? So you go buy a house, but then you have to buy a dishwasher and buy paint and whatever. So what's going on there is big jumps in housing starts, sort of the highest it's been in years and years and years, mainly for single family homes, not apartments. So that single family permits, for example, is as high as it's been since 2007.
So John, I live in a bubble, a suburb of Chicago, and then I grew up in a suburb of Detroit. To me, when I see these crazy high housing starts, like, where do you find the land, right? I mean, are they all concentrated in like Dakotas, you know? I mean, where, or are existing homes spiking to the same level that new home starts are?
Yeah, existing homes are spiking. They're at 2007 levels as well. And sort of months of supply. We talked about the retailer supply situation and the realtor supply situation is exactly as bad. Like they've got about, you know, 2 months of supply on hand versus usually 4 or 5 in the last couple of years. And so you were asking before about like sort of the regional breakdown. Most of the new housing permits are coming in the South, right? Like that's kind of no surprise. That's where people are growing. Though what's interesting is that the highest percentage increase is actually in the Northeast. Where the numbers are lower because, like you pointed out, there's not a lot of land, but we're building, they've got a lot more permits than they usually do. So, yeah, so in terms of number of houses, it's, you know, South or the West is where the homes are being built.
Yeah. John, I think you had a couple of points on industrial production, and that's pretty much it for the week. What do you got on industrial production?
So industrial production is sort of a similar story to our big picture. It went down a lot. It's come about halfway. The only thing that I would say that's different on industrial production to sort of the economy as a whole is that it looks like it's trending down a little bit. And it's only a couple months, so it's hard to get too excited yet, but it's definitely not sort of continuing to improve, at least last month. So
by getting excited, you mean getting like scared?
Yes. Yes. It's not, we can't say for sure we have a new trend here, but the last number was not encouraging. And it's in distinction to like China, for example, has bounced back a lot more strongly than we have.
And I don't want to be conspiracy theorist. Do we trust that data? Okay. So John, I always like to wrap the podcast up with some of the interesting data points that are not off radar, but you know, things that you look at, maybe higher frequency or anything that's popped across your radar that is maybe non-traditional in what we think of as economic data.
We are trying to keep eye on new data. So if you look at the mobility indexes, they're probably a little stable. So those are basically like tracking people's cell phones and seeing where they're going. Those are basically stable. The number of people like going to work, according to Google, is basically at a high since the crisis, but isn't improving at a steady. It looks more steady than taking off. And retail hasn't changed, since July. And then if we look at the open table data for seated diners, that seems quite static. It had a big burst over Labor Day, but is stable since then. And then the TSA security clearances looks quite stable as well. So there is, it's sort of consistent with our basic theme of a attenuating improvement in the economy.
Great. Well, I think that wraps up the podcast for the week. Oh, what are we looking at next week, John?
Okay, so next week we have some PMI data, Purchasing Managers Indices, which are good because they're very timely. We've got the regular unemployment claims. We have a little bit more housing market stuff. We've got durable goods and capital goods. So definitely tune in next week.
Sounds great. Well, thank you for listening. As always, we ask you to subscribe and give us a 5-star rating. And John, thanks for your time. We will chat next week.
Thanks, Mac. Talk to you later.
To learn more about Aster Investment Management's research and strategies, please visit us on the web at www.asterim.com or stay up to date by following us on LinkedIn, Twitter, and our app is also available on the App Store and Google Play. Thank you. Aster Investment Management, LLC, is a SEC-registered investment advisor. All information contained herein is for informational purposes only. This is not a solicitation to offer investment advice or services in any state where to do so would be unlawful. Analysis and research are provided for informational purposes only, not for trading or investing purposes. All opinions expressed are as of the date of publication and subject to change. They are not intended as investment recommendations.